The vibrational energy forces around Earth are in constant flux. It seems to me that if these magnetic fields change density, they would produce cyclic variations over centuries of human time. Therefore, we may be more or less receptive to viewing spirits on Earth in any given century. Perhaps the ancients really could see more than we do in the modern world. Nature spirits. On a national TV show, a woman reported that she had seen elves in her vineyard. She said that in the beginning she only heard them and was a little concerned about her sanity. In time she was able to talk to them and a few became visible to her. She described them as being about 2 feet high with pointed ears and wearing baggy pants. Of course, many people in her area thought she was crazy when this news got out. The advice she received from these beings about what to use in her soil to increase the quantity and quality of grape production over that of the neighboring farms soon caused many of them to take her more seriously. When the story was released, this woman was invited to have her brainwaves tested. When her senses were stimulated, it was found that portions of her brain were capable of a much higher energy output than normal. I had a client who also claimed to have such abilities. She was an old soul and in a deep trance state said, "Fairy folk were here long before the rise of our civilizations and have never left. Most of us do not see them today, as in ancient times, because they are so old their density has become very light, while our earth bodies still have heavy energy." I questioned her further and she added, "While a rock has a 1D density, a tree would be a 2D and our bodies are at the 3D level. Thus, the beings of nature would be invisible with a transparency registering between 4D and 6D. When I think of the woman who saw elves in her vineyard, I see a picture in my mind. If we could look at Earth with X-ray vision, it might resemble a series of overlaid, clear plastic topographical sheets. These vibrational energy layers vary in density and denote alternate realities to me. Certain gifted people might be able to see within these layers, but most of us are unable to do so. It is also my belief that much of our folklore comes from the memories souls have of their experiences on other physical and mental worlds. What they have to say about these experiences while under hypnosis conforms in some respects to the myths and legends of Earth. These soul associations include spirits and trees and plants as well as connections to the elements of air, water and fire. Folklore and soul memory will be explored further in later chapters. Ghosts. Many researchers into the paranormal have written about ghosts. I do not consider myself proficient in this field, although I have had some exposure with souls as ghosts. At my lectures I am often asked how benevolent spirit guides can allow these beings to wander around lost, unhappy and alone. My contribution to the study of ghosts will be to review what I feel are some misconceptions and to explain this phenomenon from the perspective of the ghost rather than from those who see them on Earth. When I began to devote my hypnotherapy practice exclusively to the study of life between lives, it took years before a client came to me who had been a ghost for an appreciable amount of time after a former life. I don't consider short-timers ghosts in the traditional sense. For instance, I had a client who died young in a schoolhouse fire while saving the children. This teacher stayed around town for some months afterward just checking on the kids and other people who were grieving at her untimely death. When I asked what prompted her to finally leave, she said, "Oh, eventually one got bored. I have come to the conclusion that only a small fraction of souls have ever been ghosts, beyond the normal amount of time it takes for the new discarnate to adjust before leaving Earth. I don't believe we are being haunted by that many ghosts around the world. The cases which follow will demonstrate that our guides do not compel or coerce us to move into the spirit world if our unfinished business is so overpowering that we do not want to leave Earth's astral plane. I find this is especially true if the soul has a permissive guide. Some guides have much more of a hands-off approach. Then, too, our guides typically don't make personal appearances next to us at the moment of death at ground zero. For most souls, the pulling sensation right after death is gentle and only grows more deliberate as we leave Earth's astral plane. There is no question that higher beings are instantly aware of our death. Yet the wishes of the deceased are respected. Keep in mind that time means nothing in the spirit world. Discarnates don't have a linear clock in their heads, so staying behind for days, months, or years doesn't have the same relevance as with incarnates. A ghost who has haunted an English castle for 400 years and finally returns to the spirit world may feel in spirit time this amounted to 40 days, or even 40 hours. Some people have the misconception that ghosts don't know they are dead or how to escape their situation. Yes, in a sense, they are trapped, but this is a condition of mental obstruction rather than any material hindrance. Souls are not lost in some confined astral plane, and they do know they have made a transition out of life on Earth. The ghost's confusion lies in the obsessive attachment they have to places, people and events where they can't let go. These actions of self-displacement are voluntary, but special guides, called Redeemer Masters, constantly watch for signs that the known disturbed spirits are ready to exit. We have the right to self-determination, even with our death experience. Spiritual guides will honor poor decision-making. From what I have been able to observe, ghosts are less mature spirits who have trouble freeing themselves from earthly contaminations. This is particularly true if their stay in limbo is for prolonged periods in earth years. The reasons for staying behind are varied. Perhaps the life ended in an unexpected manner, which caused a deviation from a major path. These souls may feel their free will has been thwarted in some way. Quite often there was a terrible trauma connected to the ghost's death. Perhaps they want to try and protect a person they care about from danger. In 1994, a young woman driving at night on a road not far from my house in the Sierra Nevada mountains tumbled down a steep embankment and was killed. No one had seen the accident or noticed the wreck 50 feet down the hill where for 5 days her 3-year-old son clung to life. This accident attracted national attention when it was reported that a passing motorist saw a ghostly apparition of a nude young woman lying on the highway directly above the wreckage. This was a dramatic way for this ghost to be noticed, and it worked because her child was found just in time to save his life. I find the underlying cause behind disturbed spirits to be a sudden change in their planned karmic direction that they perceive to be not only unexpected but unjust. The most common cases of ghosts appear to involve souls who were murdered or wronged by another person in life. My next case begins as a typical ghost story, but then reveals how these matters are resolved constructively for the ghost. The abandoned soul, Belinda, came to see me because of an overwhelming sense of sadness she was unable to comprehend based upon her current life experience. During my intake interview, I learned she was 40s even and had never been married. She moved to California from the East Coast after a stormy breakup with a man called Stuart some 20 years before. Belinda cared for Stuart, but she had broken off their engagement after making a decision to change her life and come west to pursue a new career. She asked Stuart to come with her, but he did not want to leave his job and his family. Stuart pleaded with Belinda to marry him and stay in the area where they had both grown up, but she refused. Belinda told me that Stuart was devastated by her leaving him, but he wouldn't follow her. Eventually, Stuart married someone else. Some years later, Belinda said she met Bert and they had an intensely passionate relationship for a while, but eventually he left her for another woman. I wondered if this was the source of Belinda's unexplained sadness, but she told me no, she had been hurt, but that it was a good thing she hadn't married Bert. Belinda now realized that besides his being an unfaithful lover, she and Bert were temperamentally unsuited. Belinda added that, for some reason, long before her relationships with men began, she had these strange feelings of abandonment and loss. Case 14. It is my custom to move subjects into their most immediate past life before we entered the spirit world. This hypnosis technique allows for a more natural mental passage following a death scene. I asked Belinda to pick a critical scene to open our discussion about her former life. She chose one of great mental anguish. She said she was a young woman by the name of Elizabeth living on a large farm near Bath, England, in the year 1897. Elizabeth was on her knees holding the coattails of her husband, Stanley, who was dragging her through the front doorway of their manor house. After 5 years of marriage, Stanley was leaving her. Dr. N, what is Stanley saying to you at this moment? S, now begins to sob, he says, I'm sorry about this but I need to get away from this farm and go out to see the rest of the world. Dr. N, how do you respond, Elizabeth? S, I am imploring, begging Stanley not to leave because I love him so much and that I will try harder to make him happy here. My arms are aching from holding his coat and being dragged down the hall to the front steps. Drive, N, what does your husband say? S, still crying, Stanley says, it's not you, really? I'm just sick of this place. I'll be back. Dr. N, do you think he means it? S, oh, I know a part of him loves me in some way but his need to escape this life and all he has known since he was a boy is too overpowering. After this statement my subject's body begins to shake uncontrollably. Dr. N, after soothing her a bit, tell me what is happening now, Elizabeth? S, it's about over. I can't hold him any longer, my arms are not strong enough, they hurt. Subject rubs her arms. I fall down the rest of the steps in front of the servants. I don't care. Stanley gets on his horse and rides away while I watch helplessly. Dr. N, do you ever see him again? S, no, I only know he went to Africa. Dr. N, how do you maintain yourself, Elizabeth? S, he left me the estate but I do not manage it well. I let most of the staff and workers go. In time we have almost no livestock and I am barely subsisting but I cannot leave the farm. I must wait for him should he finally decide to come back to me. Dr. N, Elizabeth, I now want you to go to the last day of your life. Give me the year and the circumstances leading up to this day. S, it is 1919, subject is 52, and I am dying of influenza. I haven't put up much resistance in the last few weeks because I have just been existing. My loneliness and sorrow, the struggle to keep the farm going, my heart is broken. I now take Elizabeth through her death scene and attempt to bring her into the light. It is no use because she remains grounded to the farm. I soon discover this rather young soul is about to become a ghost. Dr. N, why are you resisting moving up away from Earth's astral plane? S, I won't go, I can't leave yet. Dr. N, why not? S, I must wait longer at the farm for Stanley. Dr. N, but you have waited for 22 years already and he has not returned. S, yes, I know. Still, I just can't bring myself to go. Dr. N, what do you do, now? S, I hover as a spirit. I talk to Elizabeth about her ghostly appearance and behavior around the farm. She does not zero in on Stanley's energy vibrations to locate him anywhere in the world, as an experienced soul would do. Further questioning indicates that Elizabeth has the idea that if she can scare away any potential buyers, the estate might remain in the family. Indeed, the property does sit idle with no new occupants because everyone in the district knows it is haunted. Elizabeth tells me she flies around the manor house crying over her abandonment. Dr. N, how long do you wait for Stanley in Earth years? S, 4 years. Dr. N, does this seem like a long time for you? What do you do? S, it is nothing, a few weeks. I cry, and moan over my sadness. I can't help it. I know this scares people, especially when I knock things over. Dr. N, why do you want to scare people who have done you no harm? S, to express my displeasure at what was done to me. Dr. N, please explain to me how all this comes to an end. S, I am called. Dr. N, oh, you have asked for a release from this sad situation. S, long pause, well, not actually, sort of, but he knows I am about ready. He comes and says to me, don't you think this is enough? Dr. N, who says this to you, and what happens? S, the Redeemer of Lost Souls calls to me and I move further away from Earth with him and we talk while waiting. Dr. N, just a minute, is this your spirit guide? S. smiles for the first time. No, we are waiting for my guide. This spirit is Doni. He rescues souls like me. That's his job. Dr. N. What does Doni look like and what does he say to you? S. laughs. He looks like a little gnome, with a wrinkled face and a top hat which is all beat up. His whiskers shake when he talks to me. He tells me if I want to stay longer one can, but wouldn't it be more fun to go home and see Stanley there? He is very comical and makes me laugh, but he is so gentle and wise. He takes me by the hand and we move to a beautiful place to talk more. Dr. N, tell me about this place and what happens to you next. S, well, this is a place for grieving souls like me and it looks like a beautiful meadow with flowers. Doni tells me to be joyful and he infuses my energy with love and happiness and purifies my mind. He lets me play like a child again among the flowers and tells me to chase the butterflies while he rests in the sun. Dr. N, it sounds wonderful. How long does all this go on? S, rather put off by my question. For as long as I want. Dr. N, during this time, does Doni talk to you about Stanley and your behavior as a ghost? S, reacts with distaste. He absolutely does not do that. The Redeemer is not Titian, subject's guide. Those questions will come later. This is my time to rest. Doni's old face is so full of kindness and love, he never scolds. He just encourages me to play. His job is to bring my soul back to health by helping me cleanse my mind. After Elizabeth's energy is rejuvenated, Doni escorts her to Titian and kisses her goodbye. Then the preliminary evaluations begin as with a normal orientation for someone returning to the spirit world. I was able to access this conference with Elizabeth Belinda and it was instructive. In the beginning she stated that her life as an abandoned wife was wasted. Certainly, Elizabeth pined away much of her life in suffering without making adjustments or accepting change. Under Titian's guidance she saw that this lesson was not wasted. Belinda today is a very independent and productive woman who has weathered many emotional storms. By now, I am sure the reader has figured out that Stanley is Stuart today. When I relate this part of the story to people, some say to me, "Oh, good, she was able to turn the tables on that bastard with the same treatment to get revenge for what he did to her." This thinking shows how we misunderstand karmic lessons. The souls of Elizabeth and Stanley volunteered to assume their roles today as Belinda and Stuart. Stuart needed to feel the emotional pain of what he had wrought on Elizabeth. As Stanley, he had made a commitment of marriage in a culture and time when women were quite dependent upon their husbands. Because his action to leave her was swift and uncompromising, it was particularly brutal. This does not excuse Elizabeth, who took no responsibility for making changes in her life. Her suffering and non-acceptance of the situation was so extreme she ultimately became a ghost. By assuming Stanley's role in her current life, the soul of Belinda had to learn what motivated Stanley's feelings of entrapment in an undesirable location. Belinda was not Stuart's wife when she left the East Coast, so the commitment was not quite the same as Stuart had with her in their former life when he was Stanley. Yet in this life they were lovers again and Stuart felt forsaken by Belinda's desire to leave their town, friends and family to seek adventure and opportunity elsewhere. Because she had the courage to do this alone, Belinda's soul has now acquired the insight that Stanley did not leave her out of a malicious desire to inflict emotional pain. Stanley wanted freedom and so did Belinda. Belinda has carried the mental imprint of this past life into her life today. From a karmic standpoint, Belinda has a dose of residual sorrow as Elizabeth which she was unable to comprehend until our session. Belinda told me she still thinks about Stuart and he probably cannot forget her since she was his first love. They are soulmates in the same group and I think it is likely the two of them will assume a new role together in their next life, balancing what they have learned in the last two lives. For those of you who are curious why Belinda had to endure a brief unrequited love affair with Bert, this was a test. Bert is another member of the same soul group and he volunteered to trigger Belinda's soul memories of being Elizabeth to see if she had learned to stand up to the emotional pain of a broken heart. Bert's actions also served as a wake-up call for Belinda to realize in her current life how Stuart felt when she left him. The blade of karma cuts both ways. Spiritual duality. Some years ago, a magazine article recounted the travels of an American woman who was driving through the English countryside and felt inexplicably drawn to a small side road away from her intended destination. Soon she came to a deserted old manor house, not Stanley's. The woman was told by the caretaker the house was haunted by a ghost who looked very much like her. Walking around the grounds, she felt an eerie connection to something. Presumably she was there to help release herself. The two portions of her soul could have been drawn to each other in the same mysterious way that two people living parallel lives with one soul might be if there was a compelling purpose. In chapter 1.1 touched upon the duality of souls and how they are able to divide their energy to live more than one life at a time. A portion of the energy of most souls never leaves the spirit world during their incarnations. I'll discuss soul division further in the next chapter, but splitting soul energy is particularly relevant to the study of ghosts. In my last case, even though Elizabeth was in limbo for a while as a ghost, another part of her energy remained in the spirit world working on lessons and interacting with other souls. That other portion may also incarnate again and move on to a new life, which is what I believe happened with the woman who found the haunted house. I disagree with some ghost authorities who state that ghostly forms only represent an earthly shell without a soul's core of consciousness. There are life cycles when souls choose to take less energy than they should into a human body. However, even if they become ghosts, such souls are far more than an empty shell of energy. One would think that the balance of a ghost's energy remaining in the spirit world ought to be more helpful to their disturbed alter ego still hanging around Earth. From what I hear, most immature souls who cross over are unable to perform this transfer and integration of energy by themselves. The following excerpt is a report I received from the soulmate of a ghost. This ghost is a young level I soul who was my subject's first husband. Case 15, Dr. N, you have told me that your first husband, Bob, was a ghost after his last life. Please explain the circumstances here. S. Bob became a ghost because he was killed early in our marriage in that life. He was so overcome with despair and concern for me he wouldn't leave. Dr. N, I see. Can you tell me approximately how much of his total energy he carried with him into that life? S, nods her head in assent. Bob had only about a quarter of his energy and it was not enough for him in this mental crisis. He misjudged, stops. Dr. N, do you think that if Bob had taken more of his energy to allow for this contingency he might not have become a ghost? S. Oh, I can't answer that, but I think it would have made him stronger, more resistant to sorrow. Dr. N. Then why did he take so little energy to Earth? S. Well, because he wanted to be more engaged with his work in the spirit world. Dr. N. I'm confused about why Bob's guide didn't just make him take more energy to Earth. S. Shakes her head negatively. No, no. We are not pushed around that way. We are free to make our choices. And Bob didn't have to become a ghost, you know. Bob was advised to take more, but he is stubborn and he was also considering another life at the same time, a parallel life. Dr. N. Let me make sure I understand. Bob underestimated his capacity to function more normally in a crisis with a body having only 25% of his energy capacity. S. Sadly, I'm afraid so. Dr. N. Even though in death that body was gone? S. It didn't matter. The effects were still with him and he didn't have enough strength to combat the circumstances. Dr. N. How long did Bob stay a ghost before the rest of his energy was restored to him in the spirit world? S. Not long, about 30 years. He couldn't seem to help himself, lack of experience, part of his lesson. Then our teacher was called by, you know, those beings who patrol Earth watching over the disturbed ones. To go get the rest of him to come home, Dr. N., they have been called the Redeemers of Lost Souls by some people. S., that's a good name for them. Only Bob's soul wasn't lost exactly, only tormented. Souls in seclusion. My next case involves a more advanced subject who provided me with details about entities who are not ghosts but won't go home after death. As the case unfolds, we will see that there are two motivating factors that drive these types of souls into seclusion. Case 16, Dr. N., are the people who die who are not ready to return to the spirit world? S., yes, some souls who are released from their physical bodies don't want to leave Earth. Dr. N., I suppose they are all ghosts? S., no, but they can be if that is their desire, most are not. They simply don't want to be in contact with anyone. Dr. N., and their spiritual energy does not go home right after death? S., that's right, except there is a part of their energy which never left the spirit world. Dr. N., so I have heard. But let me ask if you consider these secluded souls as short-timers or do they stay in limbo for a long time in Earth years? S., it varies. Some want to return as quickly as possible in a new body. These souls don't want to give up their physical form for any length of time. They are different from most of us who want to rest and go home to study. Many of this type have been real frontline warriors on Earth. They want to maintain a continuity with their physical life. Dr. N., well, it is my understanding that our guides won't permit us to be in some kind of holding pattern near Earth and go right into a new life. Don't these souls know they must go through the normal process of returning back to their groups, receiving counseling, studying their lessons and taking some part in the selection of a new body? S. laughs, you're right, but the guides don't force those in extreme distress to return home until they see the benefits of doing so. Dr. N., yes, but they won't give them a new body right away until after some sort of period of readjustment. S. shrugs, yes, that's true. Dr. N., is it also true that other disturbed souls don't want to go back to Earth and won't go back where they belong in the spirit world either? S. that's right, another type, Dr. N., but if both soul types don't prowl around Earth as discarnates bothering people as ghosts, should I be calling them disturbed when all they want is to be left alone? S. they are divergent. Their actions are the result of something unfinished, traumatic, overwhelming. They are unwilling to let go and this conduct is not usual. They won't talk to their teachers because of the extent of their unhappiness. Dr. N., why don't their guides just take charge and pull them up deeper into the spirit world despite their resistance? S., if souls were forced to do what is right for them, they would learn nothing from getting into a funk and shutting themselves up from everyone. Dr. N., okay. But I still wonder why the souls who want to come back right away, with no stopovers in the spirit world, can't just be given a new body immediately? S., can't you see that placing a disturbed soul into a new body would be totally unfair to a baby just starting life? These souls have a right to be in seclusion, but they will eventually make the decision to ask for assistance. They must come to the conclusion they can't progress alone. Being given a new body won't help them. Dr. N., where do the souls go who don't want to wander the earth as ghosts but won't go home? S., ruefully, it's any space they want to create for themselves. They design their own reality with memories of a physical life. Some souls live in nice places like a garden setting. Others, those who have harmed people, for instance, design terrible spaces for themselves like a prison, a room with no windows. In these spaces they box themselves in so they can't experience much light or make contact with anyone. It is self-imposed punishment. Dr. N., I have heard that disturbed souls, the ones associated with evil, are taken into seclusion in the spirit world. S., that's correct, but at least they are ready to face the music and have their energy healed properly with love and care. Dr. N., can you give me some indication of how our guides deal with all types of souls in self-imposed exile? S. They give them time to sweat it out. This is a challenge for teachers. They know these souls are concerned about their evaluations and the reactions from their soul groups. They are full of negative energy and not thinking clearly. It may take many reassurances by those who wish to help them before these souls agree to give up their self-imposed places of confinement. Dr. N., I assume there are as many techniques of persuasion as there are guides? S., sure, depending upon the range of skill.